the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast, and we're back again with the entomologist, and today we're going to devote the whole time to soybeans. There's a lot of stuff going on and a lot of stuff about to come at y'all real hard, they think. So Angus, what's in store for us today?
Well, we're getting to that point in the season where there's actually some beans already being cut. There's a lot of desiccated, and we got a lot of late beans. So as we start taking out more and more of the early beans, it's just going to be green islands out there that are going to fill up with stuff quick, and we're hearing about some of that now.
So green islands, which means the only thing to eat.
That's exactly right.
So I picked last up on
one,
that right.
Yeah, last one with the green wins the trophy.
Yeah.
You know, before we get too far, we should let everybody know that the white-headed cockroach is not around in here today.
Don scared him off. He looked down and saw the shine.
I've been looking for it. It hadn't made its way back out yet.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye out while we're in here.
Yeah.
So, Don, what you sweeping in all those trips you take every week?
Well, we've got loopers showing up here, there, and yonder, and are building.
Where's here, there, and yonder?
Pick a direction. I'm finding them south, east, west, here, some north of here.
That covers here, there, and yonder.
Well, I just wanted to know how far over yonder was.
It's about like a country mile.
As far as you want it to be.
Pretty much all over the delta, I think is what he's saying.
All right, proceed.
Red-banded stink bugs are mostly south of us. We're picking up some, you know, on the same latitude as Stone, some a little further north, but it seems like the bigger numbers are further south, Holly Bluff, Yazoo City, those areas.
Well, I figured the loopers have got to be bad because I pulled up to the house the other day and I had one on the tailgate of my truck and rode from Cleveland all the way down there, I suppose.
So now we know how they migrate.
That's how they migrate. Yeah. Oh, Bobby's truck.
Well, it happens. But no, in all seriousness, you know, what do you want to attack first? So at most of the beans out there, you safe to say you're in that R3 plus stage right now. And I don't think there's a lot that doesn't have at least a bloom tag on it or some semblance of a pod forming. Where do we need to concentrate our efforts at on those loopers?
Well, the thing that I think we're going to face this year as far as loopers go and stink bugs, which we're going to talk about in more detail, is just the sheer number of acres that we have this year that are late. And just as a result of planting date alone, I mean, there's a lot more acres, you know, that'll likely have to be treated just because of that.
So do you have any information? You talked about planting date. Do you have any information saying past this planting date we need to watch out?
I'd say probably past growth stage. I mean, you're hitting R6.5 or real close. You have very little to worry about as far as loopers. I mean, the earlier you're growth stage-wise, they get in there, the bigger the impact it is on yield.
Right, but I guess timing that up with when those worms come through, can you say, hey, if you plant it on March 15th, you need to be looking hard versus if you plant it on May 15th?
Well, if you planted anywhere from March 15th to that sweet spot we always talk about, probably April 15th through about the 25th of April, you probably don't have a whole lot to worry about with loopers. It's everything beyond that, and especially this year where we got a lot more late May and even June planted beans.
Gotcha. So just before we get off loopers and go to what I know y'all want to talk about, what are you attacking those boogers with?
Well, the last several years, probably the predominant product that's been used is Intrepid Edge. I mean, we have a few looper products out there. Regular Intrepid still works, and there's several generics out there. Intrepid Edge is taking, I would say, and I guess y'all would probably agree, most of the looper yeah. market. And, it works well. It gives you a little faster knockdown. Regular Intrepid still works also. But the diamides have taken a little bit of a back seat, and I guess the reason for that is, and they're not misses, don't get me wrong. We wouldn't hope through the whole what is a miss last week. But, we're seeing more loopers behind diamides than we're comfortable with in some cases. I would say most of the time they get them below threshold, but residuals are shorter than they used to be, and we leave in more in the field, which is, you know, a little unusual for the diamides. So most of the methoxyphenazide, which is your Intrepid and your Intrepid Edge type products, have been used on most of the acres over the last few years.
Yeah, you brought up one point about residual, that a point that I was thought we needed to make today, is we sprayed a bunch of soybeans with diamides for bollworms a couple weeks ago, and when loopers were still susceptible to the diamides, what we would see is where we sprayed bollworms at R2, R3, we never saw those loopers develop. But don't expect that anymore the last 2 or 3 years. That's where that resistance is really showing up, is we're not picking up that residual.
Okay, and how are these pop-up showers we're having affecting that, Jeff? I know y'all are working on some of that.
Well, it's going to affect anything that we use. One of the things that we've seen, though, in our test, is that rainfall seems to have very little impact on the diamides. And it's probably going to have a bigger impact on Intrepid Edge. But it's definitely going to shorten the residual of anything that we put out there if we get an inch or two of rain on the field.
Okay, and what is that normal residual window versus what you figure it's going to be shortened to with Intrepid Edge? I've heard you talk about residuals from the diamides and stuff, but what do we generally consider a decent residual time?
Well, I don't really know exactly what the residual is on Intrepid Edge. The spinetoram or radiant component of that is going to have a short residual. The residual is going to be a little bit better with Intrepid Edge for loopers than it is for bollworms, because the Intrepid's still going to do a really good job on the loopers, whereas it's almost a complete miss on bollworms. And so we're getting that residual out of the Intrepid component of Intrepid Edge for looper control.
In the methoxy side of that mix, and Jeff just mentioned it, it's Intrepid Edge is spinetoram and methoxyphenazide. Most IGRs are pretty rain fast. The radiant side of it is, like he said, is probably not as much. But typically with the rates that we're using, I mean, generally you're going to get 10 to 17 days, even with the Edge, because we're using a little bit higher methoxy rate. The one thing we need to think about when we think about residuals, that's the number one question that we get now. Everybody wants to know about residuals on everything. And, you know, one thing that I hear a lot from different folks that is completely wrong when it comes to residual is, hey, if I go make an application of whatever for whatever pest and I don't have to spray again for 3 weeks, they say, hey, that's 3 weeks residual. That's not 3 weeks residual. The pest didn't show back up for 3 weeks. But I used to run what I would call true residual tests, where we would just go out and start spraying before the pest got there, say every week, and then we'd rate them tests, and we would know when the loopers or whatever it was we was looking at would show up. And in the old days, when these diamides first come out, man, I'm hesitant to say you wouldn't get 40 days sometimes. I mean, true residual. We're not even near that now, and that's why we think we got a little bit of resistance creeping in and we're leaving them in the field. And that was with the diamides years ago. But that's true residual under constant pressure. How long will you get control out of that product?
And the deal with loopers is what we do really doesn't influence the resistance. What happens in Central and South America, where these things overwinter, where there's year-round production, crop production, and they're exposed year-round, what they do or the products they're using influences how things work for us. And if they made a wholesale switch off of product X, it could work for us better than it did the year before because it wasn't being used in the crops down there. So it's really hard to predict how things are going to turn out till we start making some applications and basically making evaluations on it.
So leave it to Don to say the global community is contributing to resistance over yonder.
South of us.
Down yonder, for sure.
And, you know, the other thing that Don just said, too, is we're not creating problems as far as resistance goes with loopers either, because most of these migratory populations that move north are suicidal generations. Now, I might create a problem for Scott Stewart in Tennessee, but that next year, that's a suicidal generation. It's what's happening where the source is, like he said. So we're not really going to influence long-term resistance with the loopers because they migrate. but we're going to inherit it from other people.
So we got to learn to think of a little backwards from water, where the people downstream gets hurt. We're the opposite of that.
That's right.
Well, yeah. And the good news about that is we generally hear about things from Texas or South Louisiana and other places before they actually get here. So we'll have some heads up of any problems that we may see usually.
Good. Can we close the book on loopers?
Well, we can, but I want to make one more comment about loopers as far as products. I mean, we talked about the diamides. I've been hearing about all these methoxyfenazide shortages, and they didn't create enough in the plants in China and this and that. Whether that's going
it's
to be
the tariffs, not that creating enough.
Whatever you want to blame it on. But I'm hearing rumor, and these sometimes are true and sometimes are not, but I'm hearing we will not have enough of those products to supply the market. So then what's next? So we already talked about the diamides, and like I said, I have failed to see them not get a population below threshold, zero amount like a lot of people want to see. So I guess there's somewhat of an option. But what I did want to mention before we get too far is this pyrethroid acephate thing for loopers. I'm not a fan of it, and I'm not saying it won't knock them down a little bit, but I've got a lot of tests that would show, and even some of the early tests, Don, of the ones we put out last week, the pyrethroids and all in that test for me were poor, very, very poor.
Yep.
And I had an example from this year. It was an early flight of loopers, and a guy said, well, because it was so early, I'm going to assume they're cabbage loopers, which we can control, and he sprayed a pyrethroid and didn't kill any of them. So we need to be aware, loopers are a game changer. You can't go out after stink bugs with pyrethroid acephate, kill your loopers. I just don't, that's just not something that I'm comfortable recommending at all.
If you're between R6 and R6 and a half, you may get away with it. I wouldn't suggest you do it, but if you're an R4 or R5, I think you're going to make yourself a bigger mess down the road than you have right now.
Usually those plots go higher than my check after the first rating.
Good deal. Good deal. Well, I heard you mention stink bugs, and I think that's what we're going to change the conversation to now after you said that piece. And I'd be remiss to say that we've got a lot of late rice out there, and stink bugs are attacking it pretty well. We called in an airstrike this morning, Jeff. What have you been seeing in the rice fields?
Well, I mean, from a rice standpoint, we've had a bunch of rice stink bugs this year. And, I mean, it's probably the heaviest year we've had in 3 or 4 years from a rice stink bug standpoint.
So we're still on game there to knock them out in one shot? Or?
Well, this year, for the most part, we've done one shot, but I've heard of more fields being sprayed twice this year just because of sheer numbers.
Yeah, they've been pretty bad. This is probably the worst that I've seen them in the 20-some-odd years I've been working with rice.
Yep, absolutely.
Let's be clear, too. I mean, I know we switched gears.
I didn't think
rice.
You know anything about rice.
Well,
Angus.
What I do know
it's good
is
with
I'm not,
gravy.
Well, what I do know about rice is I'm not worried about rice stink bugs, though, in soybeans. So I just wanted to throw that out. Y'all did a 180 there, but, you know, I don't count them. And we do get calls about that because there'll be barnyard grass or whatever growing in a soybean field, and they'll catch a bunch of rice stink bugs, and I don't even count them in soybeans.
That's Angus's way to bring it back to soybeans.
Bringing it back around.
All right, Don, talk about your soybean stink bugs.
Well, I mean, we typically could see 5 different ones. Red shoulder, you know, we're not going to worry about because usually there's never enough, to worry about unless you bulk them in with greens or southern greens. Browns, which are a little more difficult to kill than green or southern green, and red banded, which is the one that everybody's most concerned about.
Yeah, so we probably ought to move. Let's talk about thresholds a little bit, then we can break some of these species out because that'll move us into red bandeds off our traditional species, like Don mentioned, which are green, southern greens, and browns. And our thresholds, we feel really, really good about those. 9 per 25 sweeps, that ain't something I think you got to cheat down. We got a lot of people this time of the year, like the early planted beans, where they're moving in them pretty hard. You know, when we get 9 per 25 sweeps, when we get to R6, we go to 20, and you can terminate at R6.5. So one thing, and this conversation came up last week, is what is R6? How do we define it? And I'll just tell y'all, I'm embarrassed to tell y'all, but in our control guide, the picture's wrong, at least the way we define it. R6 is not defined as when the beans just kiss in touching the pod. It's absolute full pod fill, which are squared off if you held your two hands together. And R65, you don't even really need to absolutely know how to identify it. I can tell you 7 to 10 days if you correctly identify R6. After that, you're at R65, and that's when the membranes peel off the seed and they're no longer getting any nutrients from the pod wall.
Yeah, the only thing, and we got into this in 17 with Red Banded, is we get some huge numbers of whatever species out there, you know, around R6.5, we could get in a situation again where the elevators are counting them as foreign matter.
Yeah. And this year, I don't know if we may or may not see that this year, because you predicted this a long time ago, Don, and it looks like you're going to be right, but we're going to deal with them, is this will look a lot more like 16 than 17.
I think so. But I was thinking more of, you know, we have a blow up of browns or greens or southern greens. This was, you know, leading or in reference to the 20 per 25 you talked about at R6.5. But you know, if we get, you know, in that 40-50 range or so, and they start counting them as foreign matter, that's kind of is not really a damage, but it's more of a dockage type thing.
You know, somewhat related to that, one of the things that I've been getting a few questions about from a brown and green standpoint is about rain showers and people wanting to cheat those thresholds a little bit to minimize damage. And, you know, we've done a lot of work with Cajun stink bugs combined with simulated rainfall and different things. And the best I remember, Angus or Don, y'all may be able to clarify this, but I don't ever remember where the stink bugs or brown and green stink bugs ever really increase that damage from rainfall as much as what we saw from red bandits.
No, you're 100% correct. If you remember, we worked on this across the state and across state lines for 5 years, and we were running as much as what we were putting in the cages were up to 6X threshold. So you're talking about 50, 60 bugs all the way leaving them in the field till you harvest and letting Memphis Grain inspect them. And not one time did we ever get dockage from our traditional species. We never did.
In those cases, it's what was more important was the amount of rainfall, the frequency of the rainfall, or basically how long did those beans stay wet.
So that brings us around to Red Banded, which is a game changer.
Yes.
A different beast, you know, compared to everything we just talked about.
It's your Asian soybean rust.
No.
No.
Not at all. This is a viable threat.
This is serious enough, and they're damaging enough. Our threshold for those is less than half of what it is for our traditional stink bugs.
Yeah, so it's 4 per 25 sweeps versus 9 for red banded. And one of the differences is, as far as terminating, where we terminate almost every pest that we have in soybeans at R65, the difference in this one is, and weather makes a difference, when we get to R65 instead of R6, we'll go to 10 per 25 sweeps and terminate at R7. Only if the weather is good. If we hit one of these rainy periods and we got a lot of red bandits in the field, then we got to think about even maybe controlling them longer. But right now, based on all the work out of Arkansas and Louisiana and Mississippi in 17, as long as you got good weather, beans are drying down good, we feel like you can safely at R6.5 double or little over double go to 10 per 25 sweeps and terminate at R7 unless something crazy is happening with the weather.
Yeah, and just to kind of give a reference of how damaging these are, in 17, Angus, myself, several others did threshold trials. My untreated plots, well, we did not spray red banded, and we never probably got over about 12 or 15 per 25 sweeps. Those beans were not sellable.
Mine wasn't either. And when we run a threshold of above 6, now this was a bad year, in that year,
yes,
when we were trying to go above the 4 that we're using, I think we might have got the 8 or I can't remember, those beans were unsellable, at least in my plots.
One of the things
too that we need to think about when it comes to you know, I get a lot of questions about what products do we need to use for for controlling them and so forth. And there's a lot of things that'll beat the numbers back when you don't have red bandits keep filling the system behind it. But at least for me, my number one, and people talk about Belay and all this, and I haven't been a big fan of that, but S-Fate Pyrethroid has been my go-to. And we did get the 24C to increase our acephate rate in Mississippi this year to 2 pounds.
And, you know, based on our work and a friend of ours work at LSU for his PhD, bifenthrin is probably the most active pyrethroid. The issue with it is the label language that restricts you to one application every 30 days.
That's right.
Jeff, you had something?
Yeah, I already forgot what it was.
Short time memory loss.
Yeah.
So if $9 beans, where do you draw the line?
You don't draw the line on red banded. You can't think like that with this pest. And the people that's went through this and experienced it can vouch for this. If you want beans, if they get in there in any appreciable number, I'm not talking about 1-2 counts that mess around and are gone. I'm talking about if we start hitting threshold in these late beans and they're backfilling behind sprays, you have no choice. You got to follow this one to the end.
And right now we haven't heard about a lot of the backfilling. We hadn't sprayed a whole lot yet.
No.
But we've been doing a pretty good job controlling them up to this point, and so it's not we're not seeing those constant immediate reinfestations like we saw in 17. It's exactly what Angus said earlier about Don's prediction that it was going to be more like 16. You know, the other question that I've gotten that we're going to get this time of year is about rainfall and product choice in those situations, and acephate is absolutely the worst product if you get a rainfall within about 8 hours of it, a decent rainfall within about 8 hours of it. So at that point, it's time to, if there's a rain expected, you know, it's best to switch off to something else in that situation, but keep that pyrethroid, the bifenthrin, in there, in that mix.
And we're going to get some pushback this year about bifenthrin for a couple reasons. One is what Don just said, the one, you know, one application per 30 days. So I can already tell you right now, we're going to get questions about karate and bathroid, you name it, everything else. And those products, again, will knock them back. And maybe that's good enough, depending on the numbers. But they will not perform consistently as well as bifenthrin. And bifenthrin's more expensive this year. So I already know those questions are coming. And, yeah, they'll knock them back, but they will not perform at least to the level we've seen with bifenthrin. I don't think there's any question about it.
So then, you know, the other question that's coming about, Angus, you can, or Don can touch on this, is cutting that back to 1 to 30, that bifenthrin rate, to save money.
I'm not real comfortable with that.
All right, you went there. You need to describe what 1 to 30 is to the youngins out there.
A gallon to 30 acres.
Gallon to 30.
There's some.
If you
want to
know how many ounces that is, divide 30 into 128. It's like 5.12.
5.2.
So that 1 to 30 question about trying to get around price, if you're just bumping normal threshold levels, you can mix that. You can probably get away with that with a half pound of acephate added to it. If you start running to some of these levels like we may see later, then I like minimum of 3/4 pound of acephate in 1 to 20 or 6.4 ounces of bifenthrin. But I do think at these low numbers, you will knock them back with that, and it'll probably get them, knock them back pretty good, but you don't get the stay in power. You might add a few days of residual or something when you add a, you know, go with the full rate.
But it, you know, it's kind of on the point you told me, is how far above threshold are you, and how much time are you between now and when you're going to be done? Yeah. I mean, if you're right close to the end, just knocking them back may be enough.
Yeah, and it might be, that's exactly right. One thing we need to mention, I know we're getting short on time here, is as this thing develops, and we're spraying more and more and more acres, it seems like every few days now, because like what's green is picking them up pretty good. Is as far as desiccating beans go. If we're in some of those southern areas where these numbers are building pretty quick, we need to make a point to get in there as soon as we can and go ahead and knock the leaves off, because these things will keep building sitting in the field if you're getting rain softening those beans up. I mean, there comes a point where we need to to try to hurry the crop up, not hurry it up. We don't want to do anything that's going to hurt us, but we don't need to let the beans just keep sitting there building red banded numbers.
So what point is it cheaper to paraquat the beans than spray insecticide?
Well, it's going to be cheaper than what we had to do several years ago where we were paraquatting with insecticide.
Well, I mean, that year we saw beans with the leaves knocked off, and you could sit there and sweep up all the nymphs you wanted.
Yeah.
So just to kind of wrap up, I think the furthest north I've heard of red band is being sprayed right now is about Highway 8.
Mm-hmm. That's before I've heard.
Yeah. So right now they're still central to South Delta, but I think there's a pretty good chance that, especially a lot of these late beans, you get up towards the Clarksdale area, there's some real late beans. Good chance that we're going to be dealing with them further north here pretty soon.
Angus, you got anything to add?
I guess my parting comment is I think we'll readdress this on another podcast in the coming weeks as we watch this thing develop.
What about you, Dr. Don?
Just if you get threshold levels of red banded, don't play around with them.
So my final parting shot is Angus and Jeff have mud on their knees and Don does not. What does that mean?
It means Don spent the morning in the courthouse on jury duty.
Well, fortunately, he got let go today.
Well, we appreciate you doing your due service to Washington County as a resident of Washington County.
And good again, job, Don.
And again, the white-headed cockroach didn't show up today.
Did not.
We'll make sure to turn some kind of critter loose in here.
I bet Don snuck in here and sprayed it.
No, I left him alone.
Put 1-20 bifenthrin on it.
I left him alone.
All right, guys. Well, if y'all need anything, y'all know who to call about bugs, and that's not me. So get a hold to Angus, Don, or Jeff, and they'll hook y'all up.
Or Whitney.
The silent one has moved from Jeff to Whitney. So appreciate y'all listening.
She's going to be on one of these soon.
We're just waiting on you to get that fourth set of headphones where we can mic her up.
If I could stay out the field and buy some stuff, it might work.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.